So welcome, everyone. Can you all hear me? Let me know, raise your hand if you can't hear me as we go on here. So we're continuing with the theme of the second foundation of mindfulness, which is feelings, not feelings in the sense of emotions, but feelings as the basic contact expression of the moment, whether we are whether there is a invitation to a pleasantness or a repulsion of unpleasantness or a neutral disinterest. The moment, each moment, each experience offers a tone associated with it. Often, as I've mentioned in previous talks, these tones go unnoticed and we're often embroiled in the reaction to the tones that we have accentuated and developed and exaggerated in the course of just a very quick moment. And we have a whole story tied up with it, past memories associated with it, and we're often running on an association that in its simplicity, it was just a feeling tone. It was just this. It was just this much. And I encouraged everyone to notice, especially in the more pleasant or enamored moments or the ones that are more aversive and repulsive, instead of moving forever in the narrative of how awful or how wonderful it is, simply go to the base feeling of the moment and see if this moment isn't worth living, regardless of the feeling tone that's being imparted. Just see if we can encompass or develop an embrace of the moment, regardless of the feelings that might be contained within the moment. And you'll see that each of us has the capacity to do just that. That we each have the capacity to bring the moment back down to its simple nature. And that when we're willing to do that, the complexity implodes upon itself. And what we were really running from wasn't so much the feeling, it was the reaction to the feeling. It was the embellishment of the feeling with all of our memories and associations of it. And so if we can just come down to a more basic relationship to what it is that where all this hyperbole is going, we'll see there's a sanity there that we may have missed. Now, I want to start off, we're going to talk about the neutral feeling tonight, but before I do so, I want to just bring us back to last week when we were having the dyads, where two people would sit across from one another. One of them would ask the other person a question, a repetitive question, something about the nature of the other person's experience, and that questioning would then drive the consciousness of the second person down to the subtlety of where that question was pointing. And that person would then respond in accordance with wherever their experience was alighting and directed by that questioning. And there's a couple of valuable reasons that we do that every so often, not very often, but every so often. One is because it shows you that you have the ability to uncover a depth of experience within you that throughout the course of a day and with all of its interactions and activity you may not realize you have access to. But probably a more important component of the dyads is that it teaches us how to use questioning to plummet our experience to its depth. It doesn't have to be somebody asking us a question. That question can as easily come from ourselves, where we ask a very fundamental question, often initiated perhaps through your own curiosity, hopefully, but maybe the homework will invite a kind of interest in some aspect of your experience, and then you begin in a journey that is very important to lay practitioners. It's important to any practitioner. It's one of the seven factors of enlightenment. It's called investigation of the mind. And that willingness to look innocently at one's experience through asking questions. It breaks us into a freshness, breaks us open into a freshness. It's an innocence. You can often find it in children who are just full of wonder and curiosity. And to reinitiate that wonder and curiosity in ourselves by looking at what it is and where it is that we have allowed ourselves become stayed and stuck is essential. I think it's just an essential part of lay Buddhism. And many people don't know how to question, and they don't think they have the ability to question, and they do. Everyone has the ability to follow one's question, a natural question, down into the experience level to where it takes us. What keeps us sort of away from that is inertia. So innate curiosity is blocked by our inertia. And inertia is there's a law of inertia, actually, in science. It says a body will remain at rest or in uniform motion until acted upon by another force. And that's very much the nature of the mind. The nature of the mind will just settle at its own level of comfort, resist any disturbance of that comfort until it's acted upon by another force. And that force will have to be directly in opposition to the inertia of the rest of the comfort. So the questioning, what questioning does is that it instills a kind of force that is counteractive to the rest and relaxation of the comfort level, where we are steady and just basically asleep within our comfort. And a question reinvites a new way of looking into that particular facet of our experience. And so it's a realizing that it's going to disturb us. It's not going to be comfortable in the sense that it doesn't disturb our life. It is going to disturb our rest. And many of us don't want to have our rest disturbed. But Dharma is by nature a disturbance of our rest, by definition. And I'm hoping that we have now long since gotten over the need to just be a sort of a steady state creature in ourselves, and that we're willing to ask questions and disturb our rest, because rest leaves you with a life that, when it's really evaluated critically, essentially is in turmoil and struggle for much of it. And the willingness to test and question our life on an ongoing basis brings it into more harmony, actually brings it into a smoother resonance with the rest of life. But we have some basic assumptions that we just don't feel like disturbing. I was listening to the radio today, and there was the question of the climate change, and one person was fighting the implications of climate change by saying that he was reading a scientific article where the person was attributing the climate alterations to sun disturbances. And there was one scientist who wrote a paper like that, despite 4,000 who say differently. And this person, because it disturbed his comfort level, because it's an, as the movie said, an inconvenient truth. This is an inconvenient truth. We don't want an inconvenient truth in our life. So we'll go towards the solution that causes less inconvenience, that doesn't disturb us so much. But Dharma is not going to be a convenient truth for you. You realize that? And that's why I refuse to have people just come here passively and just listen. I don't want that kind of audience out here. I want people who are really willing to engage themselves in an inconvenient truth and to pull this subtlety down to where it can actually change the very foundation on the way you stand, the way you present, the way your posture is to the world. And when we're talking about feelings, we're talking about some fundamental assumptions that we have based our life upon. Like a meaningful life is a life, this is an assumption that most of us have if we look at it, a meaningful life is a life that has encouraged comfort and pleasant feelings. That's what makes you, that's what determines our life being meaningful, is that we have obtained a certain comfort level within it for many of us. And conversely, we sense that we have failed when we have a lot of unpleasant feelings in our life. And then the summation of our life either becomes acceptable or not based upon that particular expression of tone. And so we have to question that. We have to question those feelings. Now there's an interesting sort of dyadic experience here, and that is that as we rest more and more upon the feelings of our life, the more pleasure and pain you'll receive from life, in pretty much equal quantities, but the less presence you'll have for life, the less alive you'll be to life. That's what you give up. You get your pleasure, you get your pain, but you give up awareness, aliveness. Now, if you want the other way, you have to pull back and not be attached or aversive to pleasure or pain. Then you get presence and aliveness, but you don't get a life that's built upon comfort. You see, those are inversely proportional to one another. But we have lived our life, and we encourage a life that's like one of those Pac-Man, you know, those little gobbling things that just simply lives on an eating frenzy of pleasure. And then draws conclusions around the moment based upon whether it's pleasurable or not. So our aliveness is directly dependent upon our willingness to abide free of pushing and pulling the moment to and fro towards the feeling tone or away from the feeling tone of the moment. Whether we can just rest in the moment. When we rest in the moment, free of those feelings, we rest in aliveness. There's only two places you can go. You can go towards the feeling, or you can go towards the aliveness. When you go towards the feeling, it also means that you're going to go towards your narrative, towards your thought, because thinking is what embellishes the feeling to make it worth it, to make it feel as if it's a worthwhile life and a substantial life and all of the other ways that we create a narrative around a feeling tone. Meanwhile, if we just, this is where questioning comes in, if we just are willing to look at the feeling tone itself, what you'll find is that it's intransient. It's intransient. It's moving. It's changing. It's in flux and movement all the time. Even you won't even have the same feeling tone about the same experience. You'll have a pleasant feeling tone about something at one point of time, but when you get tired of it, when you've been satiated with it, it'll suddenly become an aversive feeling to the same experience. And so it's not predictable. You can't rely upon feelings to be the governing force of your life. But that takes the willingness to question it, the willingness to look, the willingness to have a new understanding of what it is that's driving us. Now, what the point of all this is that it's moving us into a new evolution of consciousness. The old evolution of consciousness was one that was just based on milking life for the pleasant qualities and staying away from the unpleasant qualities of life. That was the basic fabric of the way old consciousness formed itself. But now we're involved in ourselves in a new consciousness, a new willingness to move outside of those old patterns, that old conditioning. And it's requiring more from us. It's requiring us to wake up, to wake ourselves up, to have a new fresh outlook, a new relationship to the old experiences that we have known. But some of the questions that help us wake up, like, is what is life like on its own terms without inducing it to be exciting? What is life like when we don't induce excitement? What is it like in its raw form? Now, what is it? I don't know if that hits you with the same ingrained way that it hits me, but at some point I just got so tired of having life be lived with a certain intensity, and that anything less than that just wasn't worth my attention. I wanted to know what was there, what was the relationship, why couldn't I establish a relationship regardless of whether it was exciting or not? That's it. A question like that can get under your skin. And then the other question, the other ponderance, is seeing that the eye is formed in dependency, but aliveness is found free of dependency, free of conditioning. Just what I was saying. So that you begin to see that how the, when you're dependent, when we're conditioned to a particular experience, you get yourself in that. You get yourself in that because you get your narrative. Once you have your story, you have the storyteller, and you have the whole sense of your sense within life and all of that. But we've lost something that's pretty fundamental. We've lost a sense of touch to the very fabric of aliveness itself. And you say, what do you mean by that? I mean that when you're lost in thought, you're not alive. You can think you're alive, but then that's another abstraction. You're thinking you're alive. That's a very different experience than being alive. And all we have to do is touch that fabric of being alive frequently enough that we start honoring that much more than we do the artificial, the virtual life of our thinking. And so you see that you can't have both. And you want to understand how it is that we have lost our way with all this conditioned madness. How is it that I can't find my way back to being alive? Well, it's basically because we've lost ourselves within the feeling tones of experience. So this is not a convenient truth for us, but we can do this. We can do this thing. Now, we've talked about the pleasant and we've talked about the unpleasant. Let's talk about neutral, the neutral feelings. Oh, I just want to, it seems that some of you know metta well enough to know that you start off with a pleasant person, and then you go to a neutral person on your way to a difficult person. And you bring love, the ability to love, or you try to bring the ability to love to all of those different categories. Well, the neutral is harder to love than somebody you like, because there's a natural opening of your heart to a benefactor or a friend that's there just in resonance. But what the neutral person, neutral means bland, that you don't know the person. There's no connection. There's no interest. It's just there's just no excitement. There's no intent. There's nothing there that's worth connecting. Right? You don't have any reason to know the person. But what you begin to see through the metta is that you can develop a deep affection, that love exists there, even if there isn't a feeling tone associated with it. Now, why is that important? Because in the love, there is aliveness. When you just relate to the feeling tone, oh, I don't know that person, then you don't have the love for them, and you're just relating to life through the conditioned experience that you have with life, which gives you a sense of yourself and the other person, but it doesn't give you any connection with that other person. When you allow yourself to settle in and see through the neutral, your heart begins to naturally connect, just from bare humanity to bare humanity. And you see that love is alive. Love is the expression of aliveness, and it has nothing to do with what you happen to be feeling about that person. So that sort of sets us up to how to look at feeling tones, to see if there's aliveness even in the blandness, even in the disinterested, even in the boring. And I think it's actually very important. Now, neutral doesn't stay neutral for very long. One reason many of us get into meditation is that we want the neutral. We want to be neutralized, right? We don't want to have any disturbances in our life. So we're looking for some way to be unaffected. And we associate neutral with being unaffected. And many of us hover around the word equanimity or balance of mind, hoping that we will come to some sort of flat line relationship to life itself. And I'd just like to say that that's not meditation. That's not what we're trying to do here. That's false. That's the attachment to neutral. All right. So we're not trying to be attached to neutral. We're just trying to experience what neutral is. And neutral is neutral. Neutral is just nothing exciting, nothing advantageous, nothing pleasant, nothing unpleasant. It's just that bare experience of neutrality. Now, the other way that many of us go when we aren't seeking neutrality, which is a attachment to the neutral, is that the neutral becomes unpleasant very quickly. Now, why does the neutral become unpleasant very quickly? Because we, the sense of us, doesn't get any traction from the neutral. We're not fighting anything. We're not grasping anything. We're essentially in a dead state, right? And we can't survive. The sense of I doesn't survive in a dead state. And so it doesn't, so quickly it makes the neutral unpleasant. It makes it uninteresting. See? Now we've gone from neutral, which is not really uninteresting. It's just not interesting. And we have made it into a... We've turned it. We've distorted it. It's now... And very soon after it becomes uninteresting, it becomes what? Boring. Right? Dull. Lifeless. And we can just feel, you know, just like, try staring at a wall, right? There's nothing there. I mean, maybe you like the color of the paint, I don't know. Stare at a white wall. And you just, you know, suddenly you get, what happens is you lose connection. There's no reason that the self sees to connect with that thing. And as you lose connection, this is actually one of the reasons that we can get that comes later in the talk, so let me back up. So this dull, boring, and uninteresting quality is what comes after we've located ourselves in a neutral feeling, within a neutral feeling. Now, it's a little bit like waiting, right? We've all had the experience of waiting. Waiting is neutral. Waiting's neither positive or negative. We're just waiting, right? And action can be also have a neutral tone. Everything, every experience can have a neutral tone. So you're not engaged. You're kind of between activities when you're waiting. But waiting really has a negative connotation for most of us because we're impatient. Why are we impatient? Because we're between activities. You see, I just want you to get a sense of how the sense of self cannot abide disengaged. It needs something to form itself upon. An activity is what it forms itself upon. Reactivity is an activity. Right? So waiting is just between. So we make waiting into a negative, you know, I have to wait for you. It's like a negative thing I have to do. Why? Because we are, one, not in control. We don't know when the person will show up. So we're completely out of control. And two, because we are disengaged. We are not being formed or being defined in that moment through our activity. I find that very interesting. We can so start to see how we get very disturbed within the neutral. We start fighting it, making it into something advantageous or disadvantageous. We start creating some sense of friction. We do that. Why? Because for us to be able to have a story in relationship to what's going on, we need some meat at the other end of that. We need something to bite into. The Pac-Man needs to come out. And so that allows us to form our story around it. And so if we stay disengaged, no story forms. No story forms, we stay unformed. So very quickly a story will form. Oh, wait, I have to wait. God, I've been waiting for a long time. Why isn't this, you know, on and on. Now we have a unpleasant moment. We have some traction, friction. The story has some place to grow. It has fertile soil to grow upon. And we're safely in place in ourselves. Okay? So neutral doesn't stay neutral for long. Unless we find the aliveness in all moments. Unless we're willing to uncover the heart, the love, just like in metta, the love that pre-exists the neutrality, pre-exists the neutrality, was there before the neutrality turned into something, turned us away. It's also interesting, I was thinking about this as well, is when we're not sufficiently engaged, when there aren't moments of intensity spread throughout the day, and therefore there are lapses into a neutral tone between these moments of great intensity or entertainment or aversion, drama. How do we work with that? Well, instead of just living through it, we keep ourselves busy. And busyness is a bridge. It takes us from our dullness. It takes us, it keeps us sped up so that we're always moving from hilltop to hilltop. And never settling into the valleys between that, because we're never feeling the level of neutrality within our experience. A busy mind is a mind that's future-oriented. It's looking at the next challenge it has up ahead, the next activity that it's going to do. That busyness has its own intensity, doesn't it? What you're going to do has an intensity, not what you're doing. What you're doing is often neutral, brushing your teeth, but getting through brushing your teeth so that you can get your breakfast and get to the thing, so you can see the intensity starting to generate from the busyness that we create. Now the busyness then moves through the entire day so that we never have to feel the neutral points of experience that are naturally there. The brushing of the teeth, the chewing of the food, right? Just the mundane, ordinary moments throughout the day. Because busyness won't land on those. It's landing upon the next thing it has to do and putting a stress or a charge to that doing. And that way we keep ourselves pumped up, never really feeling the nature of the neutral tones that really manifest throughout much of the day. Now, the other thing we do is that when we start feeling these neutral points, if we allow ourselves to, which is often a retreat on retreat or some place where we've taken ourselves on vacation or something and we're just allowing ourselves to relax, you begin to feel the neutral moments. You begin to, well, what is there to do? What have we got to do today? That's the first question that comes out of the mouth, isn't it? You're sitting there on vacation and the intensity has been, you don't have the same intensity of the day because you don't have to go to work or whatever. But still, there's this impetus. Well, what can we do today? Let's get this thing going. Because the neutral, the feeling of blandness, of ordinariness, is not sufficient. We're supposed to be what on vacation? We're supposed to be delighted. We're supposed to be comfortable, pleasant. Now, we also start taking this sense of dullness that comes our way personally, as personal statements. We take it as personal ownership. If we get too dull, if we experience too much neutrality during the day, which is one of the reasons that, remember, that we stay busy, well, could that signify that I'm dull? Yeah, could it be an indication that maybe it's not life? You know, maybe I'm dull. Now that's a terrible self-accusation. None of us want to feel like we're dull, but if we're not exciting, if we're not constantly, I don't know if you've ever been early on in your dating lives, you know, how you had to feel like you had to, I remember feeling this anyway, how you feel like you had to keep the relationship charged somehow, so it's always uplifted and feeling good, because if it was dull, then you were afraid, or I was afraid, that the person would say, oh, you're dull, I don't want to date you anymore, right? So this is unexciting. So there's this kind of way that there's a self-accusation that can occur if we stay too neutral for too long. It's interesting, isn't it? Or we can get into a kind of a listless, lifeless energy, and it can start feeling as if we're tired even before we try. Kind of this, in most of us, there is a despairing energy. That despairing energy doesn't necessarily mean that we are emotionally saddened or depressed. It often is wisdom, a source of wisdom. When we aren't keeping ourselves pumped up, moving from one peak to the next intensity, and you just see what life is at its ordinary level, there can come a despair that many of us stay very averse to. And this sense that it's, I've seen a family member, I had a family member who fell into that trap and just lost all his life force, really, within that kind of just listless energy. It didn't have anything that would stir him anymore. And I think many of us feel frightened by that prospect in ourselves. And then it leads to the ultimate question, of course, and that is life worth living at all? I mean, if it's not about, if we start looking at this thing and we prove that it's not about comfort, and it's, comfort isn't the source of happiness, then there's this moment, a very, very awkward moment in which our life has been built upon that assumption. And we go through a moment of terror in which life itself may not be worth living. That question arises in us. If it's not about what I've been striving for, what I've made my life around, what's it about? This can take some time to flush out. And many of us go through that dark night of the soul period in which we have ended our usual life's purpose, but the fulfillment of our aliveness has not yet been reached. And there can be this despairing that occurs. So, all of these things are part of the journey of looking at our feeling tones. And some of them, I'm sure, are persuading you that you would just soon keep it comfortable and nice. But let me assure you that at the other end of this questioning and investigation, there is full aliveness, which is worth every bit of the effort that we put forth and in its discovery. Now, some of us like to be bored. Some of us want boredom, encourage boredom, because boredom is a nice defense for us. It's not pleasant. Boredom isn't pleasant. Boredom is a waiting period. Boredom is saying that what's going on now isn't worth paying attention to. And we have to wait for a better, more exciting moment to pay attention. So the sense of boredom is really a sense of glazing over the moment and not paying attention to it. Well, why is it encouraged unconsciously in some of us? Some of us encourage it because it's a partial heart. It's a heart that isn't fully engaged. It, when we're feeling that we're not up to the task of a full living experience, that we don't think that we can really do this thing because of the person we are, boredom gives us a nice state of mind in order to sort of dismiss having to even look, having to even show up. And we can just sort of go back into ourselves and find an alternative of comfort to this sense of boredom. And it lacks, there's the lacking of intentional focus allows my story to enter. This I can just be filled with dreamy kind of narrative, storyline, just drifting in thought. Nothing's worth showing up for in the moment, so I'll think my way through life. And so the stronger my inattention to the moment is, the more I encourage the story of my inward world out. Because my inward world does have some excitement and some narrative and some sense of purpose and some sense of intentionality. And so my narrative will come out when I consider the moment boring. And so I'll actually allow, because we get fed when our narrative is expressing itself, and therefore I will actually find myself in moments of boredom, not trying to notice the boredom at all or be present to the boredom, but just letting myself drift into the thoughts. And so boredom then becomes reinforced because we have, it's a nice interlude to our thinking. Problem, though, is that when we don't show up for something, we begin to feel that there is a sense of lacking in our not showing up, and a doubt begins to show up in ourselves. And it's we have fear of the failure. If we actually did show up, and then we failed in our showing up, that's too much of a risk. So maybe I'll just kind of give it a half heart, a partial heart, and then if I don't have to risk it all, I can always say, well, the reason it didn't work is that I didn't show up for it completely. And that will be a saving grace. So I can give myself a way out of my doubt, out of my fear of being a failure. And, of course, it protects us, boredom protects us from the wisdom of seeing what is true. If we're bored with the moment and we don't show up for it, we don't have to see what is really true about the moment. And there's a part of us that really doesn't want to see the truth. We just as well stay ignorant of the truth. And so that nothing new can be shown to us. When I show up for the moment, something new will be revealed. But if I can just kind of stay bored and unattentive to the moment, sort of disinterested of the moment, then nothing needs to change, really. Nothing, and there's no newness that needs to be seen, and I can just kind of fumble my way through without any increased wisdom. So That's what's against us, all right? Now, let's look at the neutral and the Dharma, because we want to encourage some aliveness here. We want to find out a way, an avenue, so that we have a system, a practicum for dealing with the neutral, rather than just letting ourselves drift through the neutral, not willing to show up for the neutral, feel disinterested. I know there's a lot of connotation about ordinariness in the neutral and being ordinary and routine, and all of that really feels very negative to many of us. I don't want to be ordinary. I don't want to be just what everyone else is. And when we're feeling the neutral, it feels as if we're just in a kind of a bland state of... And that's the reason we get bored, is to keep us from the assumptions within that blandness. So this is where the Dharma really needs to move. And that is, we take... The Dharma rests on our interests. It only moves in accordance with our interests. Where we're interested, that's where it'll move. It doesn't move just because we think we should go somewhere. We have to be interested about where we're going in order to move it there. Now, how do you get interested about boredom? Boredom, when boredom is the lack of interest in the moment. You see? Because the mind isn't going to get interested in the moment. The mind is just going to say, it's just going to summarize this moment. It's not worth paying attention to. So we're going to have to look from a different organ. And if you start looking at what it is that's keeping us from being alive in the moment, then you'll engage the heart. The heart gets interested in where aliveness is being blocked. It's not interested in the feeling tone of the moment or trying to milk a feeling tone. It's interested in being alive, the heart. And so when it sees itself as being disinterested or bored, a question comes to it. An investigation is aroused within. It's like, what's going on here? Where's the presence? It's missing something, and it's looking. It's interested in where that thing has been misplaced. Where is it? Where is the aliveness in this moment? And it's not a pretension. It's a deep, embedded interest in wanting to flush out the mind, so that the mind will no longer be the basis and resolution of our lives. We have to be interested in more than how the mind is interpreting perception, right? And if you know that interest is an inherent part of each one of our aliveness, that when you're alive, when each of us are present, when we're awake, when we are alert and attentive, when we are aware, aliveness is a component, is a quality of that awareness. And when you start feeling yourself disinterested, you know that the opposite is true, that you've been lost, you're now lost, you're now in jail, imprisoned within the mind. There's no interest. In fact, the mind state itself is the lack of interest, and all you want now is to be comfortable. And so you'll opt out for interest by trying to be comfortable. So we have to arouse something. Okay, wait a second. What's blocking awareness in this moment? What's blocking? And what you'll see is that boredom is blocking awareness. The state of disinterest, the state of blandness. Now we have to get very quiet. We do not move just because something says it is uninteresting. If we accept that premise of the state of mind that says this is uninteresting, then we'll just go from one state of mind to another, one feeling tone to another. Whatever the feeling tone tells us, that'll be the nature of our life, and we'll be completely conditioned upon what that state of mind is for us to show up or not show up for the moment. But if we say, regardless of the feeling tone, where is the aliveness in this moment? We look through the feeling tone, we look through the state of mind to gain access once more to that state of interest. How do we do that? We get interested in what seems to be blocking the interest. We get interested in the boredom itself. What is this thing called boredom? What is this? Dead stop. Now that's the questioning. That's the dyadic questioning we were doing last week. What is this? That's a question we ask ourselves that takes us down like a stone dropped into water, just keeps going right down to the... That stone of the question just drops right down to the experience of boredom itself. And the experience of boredom itself is then... It's not assumed to be true. It's listened, it's looked at, it's aware, it's the awareness now is permeating the very sense of boredom itself, but not being bored while it's on its journey. It's actually interested. And therefore the boredom dissipates, cannot sustain itself, and we find ourselves alive within that question as the boredom, as the ice sheet breaks on that boredom and completely renewed. But you see what we have to do. We just can't let the state of mind convince us of its truth. That's essentially Dharma in its most fundamental. We have to keep challenging what our mind says is the state of affairs of life in this moment, what perception is occurring, what the feeling tone is within that. We have to question all of our feelings, we have to question our emotions, we have to question the very nature of thought and story and narrative. Just by being quiet and listening to see, is this true? Is boredom really true? Is this moment really boring? Is that the summation? Is that the truth of this moment? Just in asking that question, you are beyond boredom. Just in the willingness to pose a question to boredom, suddenly boredom doesn't carry you as convincingly through itself. So learning how to be quiet with whatever state of mind arises. Because whatever state of mind arises is a conditioned phenomena that we have learned to react, to cover and coat this moment with our conditioned reaction, and then we just build a particular attitude and a particular commentary around that attitude and around that feeling, and off we go. And our life is just lived as a continuous series of conditioned responses. Well, that doesn't sound like much of a life to me, and I hope it doesn't sound like much of a life to you. For us to stop, find the meat of ourselves, the foundation of ourselves, to regain a foothold in the aliveness, awareness, to not let anything settle between our hearts and that awareness as impenetrable. Okay, well, thank you. So if we can just sit for a minute or two. Now just as you sit, whatever state of mind is occurring, first get a sense of the feeling tone, the pleasant or the unpleasant or neutrality of it. Worry, stress, calm. Quiet. So nothing's being embroiled here. We're not making more out of anything. Everything is just allowed to be as simple as it is. And when you come to a place of neutrality in yourself, where nothing is either exciting or unexciting, relaxing within that as well, finding aliveness, finding the heart within that as well, just like in metta. Is there love for this too? Okay. Any questions or comments? I'd be happy to respond if I can.
You were talking about that place of neutrality, and I talked before about when my husband had his brain operation, and there's this other place that feels kind of similar to that, that's this place of not knowing, and there were these times when we didn't know what was going to happen, and I really wanted to say, oh, everything's going to get better, or, oh, this is like terrible, this terrible thing is going to happen. And in truth, we didn't know, nobody knew. And it was really, really hard to stay, just, and it was a practice like,
yes,
say, it's not either getting fully better,
right,
or dissolving into terrible.
Right, right.
This is just not knowing.
Right. Okay, so when there is that moment when you can't, when the truth is not, when the truth is not known, right? You don't know whether somebody's going to get better or it's going to get worse, and there's this awful not knowing. What it's awful in the sense that it's not known, but if you look, it's also the point of connection.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably the point in which you're most connected, say, to your husband, in that not knowing. And to what's happening, exactly, and to what's happening. Once it's summarized, once you know that it's going to all be better, then everything is missed, and you don't even, it's not even really paid attention to anymore because it's been summarized, right? It was in hospice care, same thing. What do you say to somebody who's dying? What you can't, you'd love to be able to give them something that would make it okay, but that's not going to happen. So you, and you'd love to say, oh, you look so good today when you come in the next time when you see them, but they don't. Or maybe they do, but you know, still know they're dying, even if they have an up day. And so you stop inviting a kind of reflective compliment to somebody. It's just a complete reflex. And what you find is that when you don't do that, you know, like, hi, how are you? I'm fine. You never met the person. Hi, how are you? Person A. I'm fine. Person B. Nobody said anything to anybody in that moment, did they? Right? So when you go in and you can't say that to somebody, you have to connect with them. So you don't have the niceties to keep it smoothed over. And therefore, there can be this real, but when you don't have that, all you have is each other. All you have is the intimacy of the moment to meet. It's that's the true invitation of, you know, right? So neutrality, I mean, neutrality is a summation. It's like this isn't worth, I mean, very quickly, a neutral feeling in itself isn't a bland statement. It's just neutral. But it becomes bland very quickly, becomes aversive very quickly, because it's not interesting. And if life isn't interesting, then it's not meaningful. Therefore, neutral is not a just feeling to attend to. And therefore, I don't have time for neutral. I don't have time for neutral. It has to be exciting. You see, this is it's very quick. It's very just automatic within our system of thinking, our assumptions. But if a neutral, okay, what? But aliveness is equally in the neutral. It's not missing somewhere. It's not just in the pleasant, or it's not just in the unpleasant. It's equally everywhere. Aliveness, awareness, is equally everywhere. We have to prove that to ourselves to be Dharma. So everything that every moment tells you to back away from, you have to prove that it's not worth backing away from. You have to prove it to yourself. That this moment is, even if you, and you have to go through a barrage of psychological waves of, oh, this is, I'm just going to be ordinary, I'm a dollard, nobody's going to like me, I'm just, or, you know, the moment's ordinary, all of that, all those waves of conditioning that we've had on each one of the feeling tones. This one has a lot of waves to it. So, okay, that's okay, let it come. What's left after all that gets washed away is that next wave of ordinariness gets washed away. What's left? Aliveness is what's left. Aliveness is what's left. How do we think we're going to find this thing? You can be really good Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. You know, find all your different, you know, spend your years of Dharma practice scavenger hunting for the right qualities of mind. To do what? So that you can get away from the qualities of minds that are already there, that you already have. The quality of mind that you already have is as alive as any quality of mind you'll ever seek or want to find. And do you think you will ever wake up to anything unless we know that for a fact? Because this moment will never live up to what could be if I just had more quietude, more calm, more tranquility, more samadhi. You see what we have to do? This is called living our life full on, where we are. And what's joyful to me about it is you don't have to go anywhere to do it. Well, that's the burden of spirituality. I got to go find a teacher. I got to go to the Himalayas. I've got to go on retreat. I've got to do. It can be very helpful if your life is called to do any of those things. But it's never without its aliveness. It's equally as alive as it was before you left on your journey. Now you got to prove that. You see, it's just our doubt that keeps us hedging our bets. Well, we say, I don't feel awake. I don't feel complete. Right, you don't feel. So look at the feeling associated with that statement. Rather than conclude that that statement is true, take it apart. Look at the feeling that you're having about yourself. Where is the aliveness within that? You see, just keep flushing it out. Is this making sense? Okay. That's enough. Thank you all.